Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Jim Boyle and Crumble, the Australian Open mascot from Glasgow, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, and thank you to lovely Jim. And to even lovelier Crumble, don't take that the wrong way, Jim. We just love Crumble, our two-time Australian Open mascot. We don't quite know what Jim's got against his other dog, who doesn't get anywhere near the Tennis Podcast, David.
That dog's just not into the podcast, Catherine, so Jim's sparing that dog. I think maybe Jim and the other dog are sponsoring the snooker podcast.
Right. I'd never thought of it that way. I wish I'd never asked. Matt, how are you doing?
Very, very well, thank you. Particularly so because when I appeared on our video call, you were both complimentary of my new haircut.
It was an arresting sight, Matt. Matt Roberts, ladies and gentlemen, has had what would, no offence, Matt, be a completely unremarkable male haircut in non-pandemic times.
That's what I'm going for.
But it's very much commensurate with your vibe, Matt. Yeah. Yeah. Is that okay to say you're not a man that likes to make a statement with your hair? Would that be a fair assessment?
Absolutely. And the hair previously was making a bit too much of a statement, hence why it needed cutting.
What statement did it make to your hairdresser when you walked in last week?
She went, oh dear, work to be done.
And this is a woman that's been seeing pandemic hair for the past 2 weeks.
Exactly.
Yeah. So in normal times, an unremarkable haircut, but in the context of the 70s rocker look that Matt's been sporting for a while, a very arresting new look for Matt. David, you've got the same look you've had for the past 13 years that I've known you, and you've managed to maintain that throughout numerous lockdowns, which I don't know how you've done that.
It's changed a bit of colour over those 13 years from its original. And that's not without any product. That's not with any products, I should say.
Someone with a bit of product.
I think complimentary, Matt, is probably stretching it, acknowledged it. I personally preferred the 70s look myself, but, you know,
oh, great.
I realise I've been outvoted here, but there we are.
Well,
I took it as a
completely
compliment.
Unnecessary insult. Yeah, right. Okay, on to the tennis, which was, unlike David's attempt at being complimentary, sensational this weekend. I was completely exhilarated by the weekend of tennis that we've just had. I think its brilliance would stand up even in non-pandemic times, but the fact that, you know, we were starved of weekends like that of tennis where it all seemed to be happening at once and you don't know where to look. And it's just, you know, a glut of glorious, glorious, meaningful tennis. The fact that we were starved of it for so long still elevates it. And I'm glad. I hope that extra sheen never wears off when we do get to experience joyous days of tennis like we had. It was a great, great week of tennis all around. Four tournaments, four very interesting champions, and some truly sensational matches. I'll whiz you through. I won't keep you hanging on the edge of your seat any longer. In Istanbul, Sorana Kostaya won her first title in 13 years. How has Sorana Kostaya been on the tour for 13 years? I don't know about you, but that makes me feel ancient, David, but that's an incredible story for her. In Belgrade, Aslan Karatsev lost out to Matteo Berrettini in the final. So Berrettini with the title there, but after Karatsev beat world number one Djokovic at his home tournament in an extraordinary semi-final. In Barcelona, speaking of extraordinary matches, Rafael Nadal beat Stefanos Tsitsipas 7-5 in the deciding set in a final that lasted more than three hours and 30 minutes. And in Stuttgart, we learnt that Aryna Sabalenka very much can play on clay, which was unconfirmed 7 days ago, but is very much now confirmed. In fact, maybe I'd like to revise that to Aryna Sabalenka doesn't even notice what surface she's walking on and just does the same thing she does no matter where in the world she is. And when she's on, it'll be on no matter what's beneath her feet.
Hmm. The only thing I would say is that she knows how to play indoor clay now. We know that. I still have my doubts that when we get on one of those dusty courts where the clay's flying around and it's hot and really feels like it's been baked and the ball's jumping off the surface and she's sliding about the place, I'm not sure whether that will work as well, because she's yet to prove that. She's struggled on clay. And Stuttgart is the one where Kvitova and Pliskova have both won, so I'm still hedging my bets a little bit on it. But this gives you, certainly gives me the feeling that that might be possible, because that's not an easy serve. Even though those conditions are better for her, she still beat some proper players this week in order to, and she pushed Barty, who of all players can make you uncomfortable on your own feet, and she still hung with her for the vast majority of that match.
Yeah, I think the sort of standout performance of the week was Sabalenka's against Halep. It was a match which actually reminded me of Świątek against Halep at the French Open last year, where Halep comes into the match looking serene on clay, probably the favourite for the tournament, and then she gets knocked off the court in about an hour with the racket taken out of her hand. I think we did speculate at the time that, if memory serves, that Świątek-Halep match was indoors because it was a rainy day in Roland Garros. And it felt quite conditions-based at the time. I did think, I'm not sure Świątek would be able to do this to Halep on a windy day. I mean, she very much proved herself at the French Open in all conditions, Świątek. But that particular match felt like, to hit the tennis ball that powerfully, that sweetly, the indoor conditions were helping her. And I do think there was a little bit of that with Sabalenka against Halep this week in Stuttgart. As you said, the way she's able to take the surface away is quite remarkable. I think Petra Kvitova can do similar things. It certainly helps in those indoor conditions to play that really aggressive first strike tennis that Sabalenka was playing. And I think Barty was able to disrupt her in just a few more ways than Halep was able to in those conditions.
Mm. Yeah, because Barty, of course, won the title. She beat Sabalenka not easily. It was a slightly weird scoreline, 3-6, 6-love, 6-3. She went on to win the doubles title as well with Jennifer Brady. More on that later, including Porsche news. But yeah, I suppose I led with Sabalenka because a bit like parallels with Serbia, that win for Sabalenka over Halep in the semis is what I think will stick with me most from that week. Just seeing Halep, sort of a goddess on clay, just sort of floundering in the face of Aryna Sabalenka, who we didn't even know who could play on clay at all at the start of the week. I do accept the conditions were a massive factor. But particularly impressive from Barty, I think, in that final, that she let the Sabalenka chaos kind of happen and stuck with it, because, yeah, it's easy to get sucked into the vortex that is Aryna Sabalenka, and the fact that it feels like when she walks onto a tennis court, everything is within her control, winning, losing, just being an absolute nightmare for opponents. It's all up to her. So I thought Barty did very well when within that vortex, really. And she's now got an extraordinary record going, Matt, against fellow top 10 players, Barty.
Yeah, she's won 10 matches in a row against top 10 players, which I looked into that. And I think there are only four players this century with a better streak. So Serena and Venus won 15 matches against top 10 players. Henan won 17 at one point. and Kim Clijsters won 11, which obviously Barty would be aiming to overtake. So it's a record of Barty's that really stands up against, you know, some of the best players we've seen in women's tennis over the last 20 years. That's two tournaments now where she's won Miami and Stuttgart, having to beat top 10 players in the quarterfinals, semifinals, and final. She is having tough draws and she is coming through. And all sorts of different players, Sabalenka, Svitolina, Andreescu, these are all very different players and Barty can handle them. And I think that's what we're learning about Ash Barty. And as she goes on this incredible career that she's having, she can flourish in so many different conditions, so many different surfaces against so many different types of players. Such an adaptable game she's got. And I think what you said, that ability for her to stay calm and measured is a big part of that. She's able to adjust herself mid-match in a way which is really standing out at the moment. Yeah, this was a title on indoor clay. She's won a title on outdoor clay. She's won a title on grass. She's won titles on indoor hard, outdoor hard. There seems to be nothing that she can't conquer at the moment, Barty. And I just love the way she goes about it in her very measured manner, yet her tennis is so potent.
You're the king of the Barty predictions, David. Is she favourite for the French Open? Is she going to, are we going to call it defend her title? I don't know. Do we have two defending champions at the French Open this year on the women's side?
I kind of feel like we do, yeah, because she didn't play last year's and Świątek won it. So we do kind of have two defending champions. I would say she is the favourite. And I'm sort of feeling that there might be a theory here that the game that can go off the rails quite dramatically sometimes. We've seen at the Australian Open twice, probably maybe more, and we've seen at Wimbledon against Sanders and Rist that day, who played very well, I should say. I kind of think that it's less likely to happen on clay because she's got a bit more time. And I don't know. I woke up this morning trying to work out what her best surface is. And I think she would definitely not put clay at the top of the list. If you remember, her view used to be, oh, I just want to get onto the grass. The sooner that comes around, the better. And then she won the French Open. And yet you just see her game just seems perfectly suited to it with the kick serve and with the really looping forehand. And yet she's still got the choice on the backhand now. Now it's a proper choice. It's not just I've got a sliced backhand and if I'm pushed into it, I'll hit a bunted backhand with two hands. She's got a choice there. And the way she's able to just withstand and absorb whatever her opponent plays, she has an answer for it if she's on her game. And I think she's on her game on clay more often than the others. I think that's likely to happen. So I'd probably say clay is her best surface.
She could be the Brizzy Borg. See what I did there? Brummy Borg last week. Brizzy Borg. Mm. She's from Brisbane, isn't she? You're both looking at me blankly. I thought I'd absolutely triumphed there. If she did back-to-back French Open and Wimbledon, Brizzy Borg. Yeah.
What do you think her best surface is?
Yeah. It's not the reception I was expecting for that, let's put it that way. Was that aimed at me? I think she doesn't have one at the moment, and I think she'd probably still say her favourite surface is grass. I think I get the impression she's itching to get back onto the grass, even with winning titles on clay and hard courts and the French Open title defence coming up. I think she's dreaming of Nottingham and Wimbledon.
I think she wants that to be her best surface because probably Wimbledon of all of them is the one that's most heralded in Australia. Okay, I mean, you might say the Australian Open, but if she could win Wimbledon, I think that would just be the ultimate in many ways. And I think it is for a lot of the Australian players. And her game just looks theoretically perfectly suited to it. And yet, I still have in my head the match she played against Daria Kasatkina there, 2018. Okay, she's a much, much better player now than she was then. But Kasatkina just picked her apart that day in the end. So very interesting. I love seeing these players move from surface to surface. It's one of the great plus points of the sport, really. that you get to see them challenged in these different ways. But she definitely looks, everything looks so compact and in its place. I think it'll just be interesting to see week upon week whether there's any deterioration in how she feels about life, because it's a long old road trip. She looks happy right now, and that's great, and I hope that carries on. But it's a long trip, this.
And a long trip virtually on her own. She's got Craig Tizer there, but she doesn't have the rest of the team that she would usually have traveling with her. Yeah, I think scheduling and not getting road weary is going to be a very important aspect of how Ash Barty's season pans out.
I loved Sabalenka Barty, which I had to rewatch because yesterday I had a 24-hour clock fail and read 1300 hours as, 3 p.m. How inconvenient that it starts at the same time as the Barcelona final. I love the final, but I still feel like the world has denied me Barty Halep, and I want to see that on clay as a matter of urgency. So if Madrid could deliver on that front, I would be, I would be most pleased. Now, I mentioned earlier that Barty also won the doubles title with the partner for the week, Jennifer Brady. I know what you're thinking, folks. The biggest news of the weekend is that Ash Barty is leaving Germany with two Porsches. However will she do that? But no, Jen Brady has been denied her rightful Porsche. And I'm saying Porsche because I've been put right several times on Twitter this week about the pronunciation. So thank you very much. Now, you know, when I'm in Porsche-related conversations, I'll sound like I belong. Because despite the fact that they positioned tantalizingly three Porsches on the court, only the singles champion wins the Porsche. And the two other Porsches were decoy Porsches. I've never said Porsches so much, which I think is a cruel joke.
Especially when you're dangling them in front of the doubles players as they play the final. I mean, what happens to those Porsches? Do they go back? And what do the doubles champions get then?
Well, the master of ceremonies said, in addition to your prize money, you're getting...
And then their eyes are lighting up.
And then it's these Tag Heuer watches, which I'm sure are lovely.
Was the shot on that framed so that the Porsches were in the background behind him? Engines running. I mean, I just think, look, it's fine. I don't expect all doubles champions everywhere to be gifted fancy cars upon winning. I just think don't have the Porsches on the court, especially when the previous week doubles champions had walked away with Volvos, I think. Yeah, I just feel sorry for Jennifer Brady. But well done to her. And it probably takes the sting out of the tail for Kravchik and Matek Zanz that in losing the final, they didn't also miss out on Porsches.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
So that was Stuttgart. We're now going to take a wee hop over to now Barcelona or Belgrade. I don't know where to go. Should we go to Belgrade?
Go on then.
Let's go to Belgrade. I've never been to Belgrade, David, have you?
I haven't, no. But let's pretend we're there. Let's,
right.
Let's analyse it as if we are.
If we were there, David, we might have received a vaccine. I know you've already had your first dose, but is another tournament that was making vaccines available to players and I think some ATP staff that were there, which is a fantastic service. I believe they even had a choice of vaccines that you could have one that's also readily available in your home nation, because obviously people returning home needing a second dose, which is really, I just think it's fantastic for people that are living life on the road and might otherwise have to miss out on their place in the queue because they're not at home. So yeah, I think that is a fantastic thing. Players, coaches, staff, lots of very happy vaccinated folk leaving Belgrade. Also very happy, not sure on the vaccinated front, but Matteo Berrettini leaving Belgrade with a title. He beat Aslan Karatsev in a deciding set tiebreak. Now, I've just watched highlights of this match because, of course, it clashed with Rafael Nadal and Stefanos Tsitsipas. A final that it looked to me like it took a while to get going. Quite a one-sided first set to Berrettini, and then Karatsev really got it going in the second set. I thought Karatsev looked quite tired in the opening set, very understandable given what he'd done just the day before to beat Novak Djokovic in, yeah, we've written here in the notes, one of the best matches of the year. And I know what ended up following in Barcelona the following day will give it a run for its money. But I think the match of the weekend was Karatsev Djokovic. Discuss.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, that match, that felt like a, I don't want to say a Grand Slam final, but it felt like a massive deal because of the way Djokovic was just trying his heart out and being pushed and then ultimately prevented from winning a match that meant a great deal to him. He obviously, in his hometown, okay, there wasn't a big crowd because there wasn't allowed to be, but it was one of those comical situations where every time Karatsev hit a blinding winner, there was silence. And every time Djokovic did anything positive, he was hailed by this crowd, and he was stretching every sinew to try to cope with the Karatsev game the way that he does, and he still couldn't do it in the end. And I mean, look, he said he wasn't completely happy with his game afterwards. You'd understand that from a guy who's won as much as he has. They get conditioned to believing that if they play well, then they win. But Karatsev is just the disruptor of the year. He's somebody, I can't remember somebody coming along in a year and just disturbing the equilibrium of the tennis ecosystem the way that he has, just out of nowhere. I know the out of nowhere-ness of it all is the story, but it's the way in which he's doing it. The power and precision and pureness of his strokes take some stopping, because it's not just flailing away. This is just his natural stroke production produces this incredible pace of shot relentlessly. And he's so talented. And Djokovic couldn't deal with it in the end. And I think it was a really special match. And the drama of it all and the ultimate victory for Karatsev, just underlining everything else he's done so far this year, this was the biggest week of the lot for me. This was the moment that I thought, actually, there's a player we're going to be seeing a lot for a long time, because there's not that much going wrong with this game.
Yeah, I mean, we asked the other week when Djokovic lost to Dan Evans, what was the balance of Djokovic having a bad day and Evans having a brilliant day? And I think, you know, we gave Evans a lot of credit. Of course we did. But I think we all recognized that Djokovic was well off his game that day. To me, this was a totally different scenario. I actually thought there were numerous times in the match where, as you put it on Twitter, David, Djokovic pressed his 18-time major champion button and played some fantastic tennis. And he was forced to raise his game to a really high level just to try and live with Karatsev. I mean, I cannot get over the fact that he saved 23 break points against Novak Djokovic, Karatsev, to withstand all that pressure against the guy many regard as the greatest returner of all time. And in the final set, he saved all 10 break points. I mean, it was unbelievable the shots he was coming up with when he needed them most. I mean, he must have the best drive volley in men's tennis. The number of times he finishes points up there with that shot, he's such a fascinating element. He's the guy nobody has prepared for, nobody has planned for. He's like the guy who turns up in series four and it's like, who is this guy? Is he real? Do we trust him? Whose side's he on? He's that guy. And I find it fascinating because he's got no baggage against these top players and he's able to just sort of go out quite fearlessly and swing away with his natural game and cause so many problems.
Matt, can I please give you the chance, as you did on Twitter, to quote David Foster Wallace in relation to Aslan Karatsev? You know you've made it when David Foster Wallace is being quoted about you, I think.
Yeah, so David Foster Wallace has got a fascinating essay on Tracy Austin. In fact, it's on Tracy Austin's autobiography, and Tracy Austin was his favorite player and he loved watching her play and he was really looking forward to reading her autobiography. And let's just say he was a little bit disappointed by it. He didn't think it quite went into the sort of analytical depth that he was expecting from such a great athlete. And the whole point of the essay is, well, maybe the very fact of being a great athlete in high pressure moments is that you don't have thoughts going through your mind. And therefore, you can't really articulate what you're feeling when you win the US Open as a teenager, for example. And it just reminded me, this match, of that essay, because after he'd saved all those break points, Karatsev said, I wasn't thinking of anything in those moments. And that is basically David Foster Wallace's point. He says, perhaps you need to not be thinking of anything in order to achieve great things in tight moments. He says, the real secret behind top athletes' genius may be as esoteric and obvious and dull and profound as silence itself. The real answer to the question of just what goes through a great player's mind as he stands at the center of hostile crowd noise and lines up the free throw that will decide the game might well be nothing at all. And I don't think Karatsev is having thoughts in those moments.
He's telling us he's not having thoughts.
And that's one of the many things which is allowing him do what he's doing.
And I think that's kind of what players mean when they say wafty stuff about staying present, isn't it? I think, yeah.
Clear your mind.
Clear your mind. In a very low-level way, I can completely relate to that. My skating coach, Jane, used to tell me that thinking was my main downfall. I would be skating around, lining up for my double loop. And she'd shout, I can hear you thinking. She'd shout across the rink at me. I can hear you thinking. I can see you thinking about all the ways that this might go wrong. And I find it a superpower, people that are able to clear their mind and be present like that. I know meditation is supposed to be a tool to help you with that. It hasn't helped me all that much so far in life. But I'll keep plugging away. But I do find it fascinating. David Foster Wallace talking about anything is fascinating, but I do think he's absolutely tapped into something there. And Karatsev is so brilliant in his nonplussedness about everything, isn't he? The first question from the interviewer after that Djokovic match was, is this the biggest win of your career? Which is a great question. You know, this is a guy that's just reached the Australian Open semi-finals out of nowhere. And this is only an ATP 250 event that he's, albeit he's beaten the world number one, but it's a very low level event. And he said, yeah, I think so. Straight off the bat. And I thought, oh, this would be a great interview. So he said that this is the best moment of his career. And then he just sounds completely bored about the whole thing. He's like, so, you know, what did you, he was like, oh, I guess I just played really well and just wasn't really thinking about much. And yeah, it's great.
It's like Andre Agassi has given him his game to me, the way he hits the tennis ball, the take backs on the ground strokes and the way the ball comes off the strings. I mean, I don't know about the return. I haven't seen enough of that. We'll have a look at that on grass. But someone like me who just watched the whole of Agassi's career, I love watching that sort of stroke production. It's just different to what we get these days.
Yeah, you're a big Karatsev fan, David.
Definitely becoming one. And I think,
would that be fair to say?
I think this week, this is the week in which I did, because I see this as sustainable now. I mean, I think that there are possibles that he might get worked out by other coaches. I think that can happen in sports, but just doesn't feel like there's that much to go wrong in his game. And it's a game that is hurting the very, very best, which I find fascinating.
One of the interesting aspects about it for me is that he's living a very different experience to the rest of us. Like, for all of us who follow the tours week in, week out, he's come out of nowhere. But for him, he's what, 27? This is not the start. He has played a lot on the Challenger Tour, a lot on the Futures Tour, and he puts what he's doing now down to an awful lot of hard work that he's gone through with his coach. And I think there's a sense that maybe he's ready for this, even if we weren't, if that makes sense. Mm. And it feels like he belongs.
The statistics say that he just wasn't playing tennis 2 years ago because he wasn't playing on the ATP Tour. You know, you search ATP Tour activity and nothing comes up, but he was playing tons of tennis. Mm. We just weren't taking any notice of it. And a Google Images search will reveal that he has had those calves for a really long time. But, says Matteo Berrettini, calves are not everything.
Especially given that there's a side-by-side photo that somebody did of them where he's got rather spindly calves.
I don't know whether they're objectively spindly calves or whether my whole perception of calves is now skewed by Aslan Karatsev. I will never, ever know. So sorry, Matteo Berrettini, if you've just got really normal calves, but they looked puny. But no matter, because Matteo Berrettini is the champion of Belgrade. It took him a deciding set tiebreak to get the better of Aslan Karatsev. As I said, I think fatigue was quite a big factor for Karatsev, very understandably, early on in that match. But it didn't seem to be as it progressed. Even with the fatigue, I actually didn't give Berrettini too much of a chance in this match. He really showed me something that I didn't give him enough credit for before the match. I just thought, well, they both got great forehands, and backhands-wise, Berrettini's is not going to stand up to the scrutiny of Karatsev's. And there were a lot of backhand-to-backhand cagey exchanges, each sort of trying to feel out the other way. Who's going to pull the trigger on the forehand first, I thought. And actually, Berrettini's backhand stood up to that scrutiny pretty well. I thought. And his nerve certainly stood up to examination very well. And he was so chuffed after the match, wasn't he? And he's given these lovely quotes about how it's the first title that his loved ones have been able to watch him win. And it really seemed to mean a lot to him. And that for me is kind of a theme of this weekend. I loved seeing how much a 12th Barcelona Open, you know, ATP 500 title meant to Rafael Nadal. And, you know, I loved seeing how much it meant to Matteo Berrettini to win that title in Belgrade.
So would you have made Karatsev the favourite for that match in the final beforehand?
Yeah, I did in my head. I mean, I perhaps didn't think about that in too much depth. And to be fair, I hadn't seen much of Berrettini play leading up to that. I was just going off what I know about Berrettini in theory. But yeah, I did make Karatsev the favourite. Yeah, I've just seen him beat Novak Djokovic.
Yeah, I mean, look, yeah. we do polls on those big finals ahead of them, 81%.
Oh, I see where you've gone.
81% of people out of 679 votes thought Karatsev would win. And I mean, I would probably have gone with that as well. What I would say is Berrettini at the Australian Open this year really made me look at him differently because of his win over Karen Khachanov, where Khachanov chucked the kitchen sink at him and still lost in three tiebreaks. It was, I just thought, and then Berrettini had to pull out with that abdominal strain, and I thought that was a real shame. I think that there's a real appetite from him to improve and to dig in and show us all what he's got. And I think, I know this is, again, only a 250 title, but I think it's quite a significant one. I think Berrettini, I think the backhand is still a problem and there are people that can get to it, but he's got wheels as well, that guy, to get around that backhand and be able to do damage with his forehand. So I think there's a lot more to come from him, actually, probably more than I expected, because I thought his run to the ATP finals was maybe a bit of a flash in the pan. I think that was an extreme year, but I think he could be a top 10 to top 20 player for quite a few years.
He's sort of the forgotten man of Italian tennis because of Sinner and Musetti rising and having so much praise heaped on them for the way they play the game and how exciting their futures look. And because Berrettini's breakout, as you said, happened in 2019, was quite unexpected. Last year was such a bizarre year. I've probably forgotten a little bit about Berrettini, and he was playing fantastically well at the start of the year. ATP Cup, he had some great wins. Then he gets injured during the Australian Open. So I think that's one of the reasons why this meant so much to him, because I think he really thought he was onto something at the start of this year, and to have that derailed by an injury, for him to come back and win a tournament so quickly, just sort of, I think, will show him that he's back on the right road again.
To borrow an expression that Hannah Wilkes used on Twitter, our lovely colleague Hannah, and this, she used it after the Karatsev win over Djokovic, but I totally think it applies to both Karatsev and Berrettini. The flash is out of the pan. I really liked that. So flashes out of pans in Belgrade, moving over to Barcelona. My goodness me, Rafael Nadal winning a 12th Barcelona Open title, beating Stefanos Tsitsipas 6-4, 6-7, 7-5 in a final that lasted over 3 hours and 30 minutes. Match points saved on both sides. Nadal saved a Tsitsipas match point with a long rally during which there was a net cord which just clipped over the net. It was one of those ones where the crowd made a murmur and everyone had their hearts in their mouths. It was an extraordinary match, and Rafael Nadal is an extraordinary champion, isn't he? 12 times a champion there. It's only an ATP 500. And it just means the world to him. Just means so much. He's 34 years of age. He's won that thing 11 times already. He had Novak Djokovic the day before, after losing in Belgrade, saying, yes, I'm annoyed. It's not nice to win at home, but it's all about the slams for me. He was asked whether he would be playing Madrid, and he said, well, it's really exhausting me to make plans at the moment. My focus is very much the slams. And I understand that. And look, the focus for all these top guys is the slams. But Nadal cared about winning that title so much. And I just love his appetite and desire for it.
I think if there's been an issue with having the greats of the game going on so long into their 30s, it has been a little bit that the focus so much has shifted to the slams. And perhaps that has detracted a little bit from the tour at times. I think also, especially in the last few months, where getting tennis back has been focused around the slams as well. We've had, you know, one tournament US Open, one tournament French Open, then that weird period at the end of last season where the women weren't really playing, a few men's indoor events. Then the start of this year was all about the Australian Open. This to me feels like the first time in a while where we've had non-slam events, which really do mean something. And the Barcelona final was the epitome of that. Both players wanted it so, so much. And I think for Nadal, the fact of winning Barcelona is enough for him. But there were these extra elements as well. There was the fact that he knows Tsitsipas is a threat to him at the moment. Those quotes he gave before the final, I'm not sure whether I will have found the level yet required to beat Tsitsipas on clay. He was very honest about that. And I believe him when he says that. I was wondering myself whether Nadal is far enough along in his process to be able to beat Tsitsipas this year. And, you know, the answer was yes, he can beat Tsitsipas. And even without his very, very best tennis, he was brilliant, Nadal. But I think what will please him most is that he knows he's got gears to tap into. He can get even better. And if he's already playing this well in Barcelona, I think he thinks he's on absolutely the right track for the clay season as a long term as well.
Can Tsitsipas get better than what we saw in Barcelona last week?
I'm not sure he can get better right now. I think that might be pretty much top level for this season. I think there are seasons in the future where he will get better, even because I think he's showing that year on year with his game. I think he is a learner, though, is Tsitsipas. I think it's about feeling comfortable in the environment. This is the first time I've seen him play Nadal where he's come out believing that he can just take him apart, because he led both those first two sets by a break. And he lost the first one. He was 4-2 up. He lost it 6-4. He was a break up in the second. He managed to get that one, but not without going the scenic route. I think he will be really disappointed that he didn't get over the line, having constructed an opportunity to win the match, to get match point. But I think he will take great heart from the fact that he came out against the guy he regards as the ultimate. And this wasn't a come from behind victory. This was him stamping his authority on the match. Okay, he didn't end up holding on to that authority, but I think he'll take great encouragement from that. With Nadal, what really struck me, aside from the fact that he has this pretty unique ability to compartmentalize a tennis match into the most important thing in his world, no matter how many he's won before, it's also his appreciation of his own tennis mortality. And he could feel it in that match that he is going to turn 35 next month. And when I was doing a list of all the other great champions of the last 20 years or so, and bar Andre Agassi, they've pretty much all gone at the age of 31. Sampras and Edberg and Becker and McEnroe. That McEnroe went on for a few years longer, but the vast majority have gone by the age of 31. And here's Nadal at 34, and he's had a long amount of time playing the sport. There are a lot of miles on the clock, as all these titles will tell you. And look how deep he's having to dig now against the very best of what else is up there. And that's where all this emotion comes from, I'm sure. This struggle to hold on, to keep in there, to keep winning these things. It's so difficult. And that's why he would take issue with anybody who says, oh, it's only a 12th Barcelona. What's he getting so uptight about? But it means a lot to him. And it's costing him that amount of energy and output.
Couldn't even muster the energy to take his socks off before jumping in the pool.
Yes.
This time around.
We'll have to give that pool a clean.
Yeah, I love that. Of course, that's his traditional Barcelona winning celebration. He goes and does a somersault into the swimming pool. And this time he left his socks on, which I loved.
And normally all the ball kids jump in as well, but they weren't doing that this
they
year.
They just sort of
COVID
spectated
reasons.
Weirdly.
Yes. Watch Nadal swim around a bit.
Let's all just watch a man do a short lap of a swimming pool.
I was just going to say one other thing on Nadal, which I thought was really nice of him and classy of him, was he used a portion of his victory speech to say how pleased he is that Carlos Bernardes is back. Carlos Bernardes, who suffered a heart attack in Melbourne this year during the Australian Open quarantine period. Nadal just said, I'm so pleased you're back, speaking on behalf of all the players, that seeing you umpire again it's just a great thing, and I hope we can share many more years on the circuit. I just thought that was such a nice touch from Nadal, and you know, it's no secret that Nadal and Bananas have had their issues in the past, but it just shows that those issues are never personal with Nadal. I just thought it was really classy from him, really stood out.
He was in the midst of a pretty insane closing ceremony, I thought.
Yes.
Watching that, I thought, have I ever seen a Barcelona closing ceremony before? Because I don't feel like I've seen anything like this before, not here anywhere. It was sort of St. Petersburg style weird. There was a karaoke opera rendition of the Queen song Barcelona with really distorted microphones. And this was all happening while you could see sort of Tsitsipas on the sidelines preparing his grief chamber to live in for the next week.
You sure? I didn't see this. I was just, you sure this wasn't your dream that you had at one point during the match when things seemed to get a bit weird?
Oh, you've outed me, David. It was a very long match. Billie Jean and I were watching on the sofa. We had a little snooze. It was unplanned. I woke up in a sort of semi-sleep state, read the 48 messages on the Tennis Podcast WhatsApp group, and then I think I went back to sleep or semi-sleep for a bit and incorporated all those messages into a dream, and then woke up again and sent you a bunch of insane messages that bore no relation to reality whatsoever. And Matt did his usual thing of politely just staying silent, obviously thinking, what is she on? But I'm not going to say anything. And David pointed it right out.
Catherine joining in the tactical chat about what's going on.
Got to join in here. Got to join in. Got to disguise the fact that I've been asleep for the last 2 hours. Just
describing shots she dreamt about.
Commented on a thing that just didn't happen.
Can I tell you one thing that did happen that I found a little step on for Tsitsipas, certainly something that I hadn't seen from him before. He won 2 points at really important moments. I think one might have been to save a break point, where he did a chip and charge using a drop shot. And I just haven't seen that before from his backhand corner when Nadal is pinning him with that cross-court forehand, lasso forehand that's jumping up at his backhand. And twice he just floated this little backhand drop shot cross court and charged after it and backed his own ability to read what Nadal would do with the pickup and volley it past him. And one time he volleyed it past him, and the other time Nadal didn't even get it over the net. But it was just a really, that felt like a premeditated decision and tactic and something that I haven't seen from Tsitsipas before.
If Tsitsipas faces Nadal at the French Open, let's say he faces him in a semi-final, he steps out onto the Philippe Chatrier court. Does that match in Barcelona, assuming they don't play between now and then, does that match in Barcelona give Tsitsipas belief? Or does he walk on thinking, I played my best? And David Law says that was my best for this season.
Sure, that's what
clay. And it was best of three sets. And Nadal's in better form now than he was then. What chance do I stand today?
I think he goes on. He go on with belief. I think he is somebody who has total faith in what he does, and when he
until he comes crashing down to reality.
Oh, for sure.
I know a lot's that happened. This is a very different defeat, but you know, he walked onto court against him in the Australian Open the first time they met, with total belief, and came off court building his grief chamber.
I could imagine he could get a really rude awakening upon playing the actual match. But I think he's able to rebuild and build on top of previous successes very impressively, actually, now. And I mean, he built a bit of an aura winning Monte Carlo the way he did. He won 17 sets in a row. I thought he would win this final, I have to say. And Nadal, just as a reminder of what he does when he hits top form, wrestled it away from him. But no, I think Tsitsipas will come out of it ultimately thinking, if he plays Nadal again, he'll think he has a chance.
Matt's nodding. Okay.
Yeah, I completely agree with David. I just think the problem for Tsitsipas is, I think Nadal takes more confidence and belief. And that will just be you know, if history has shown us anything, that is that that is even more the case when he gets to Roland Garros. And he feels like a video game character whose energy bar you can see filling up in front of you.
Canister.
Canister. That's the word, the tennis word. And you know, Nadal is not using his canister. He's filling it up at the moment, ready for an assault on Roland Garros.
Mm, yeah, that's a great visual. Over in Istanbul, Sorana Kostaya won her first title since 2008 with victory over Lisa Mertens, 6-1, 7-6. She didn't drop a set all week, Kostaya. She was 18 when she won her last title. That was in Tashkent 13 years ago. Lisa Mertens did team up with Victoria Kudermetova to win the doubles titles. It's still a good week for Mertens. But heck, I didn't see that coming either, Kostaya beating Mertens in that final. And every now and then, Kostaya just reminds me how good she is. Do you remember her win over Joe Konter at the US Open last year? And I just thought, how is she not higher ranked? How has she not had a better career? I know she perhaps struggles with nerves a bit, struggled with closing out matches, but she can look so good. And I don't quite understand, I don't think, the career that she's had. I couldn't believe it had been 13 years since she had won a title.
Which means that she won a title when she was a teenager, didn't win one when she was in her 20s, and has now won one in her 30s, which is extraordinary, really. And she came along as a teen, much hyped, really. And as you said, struggled with nerves, I think, struggled to put it all together. And in some parts of her career, has probably underperformed, really. But as almost a veteran now, she's shown she's just a workhorse. She just keeps on bringing it week after week. You see her all around the world on pretty not particularly prestigious tournaments, and still going about it because she loves the game. And it's a job. She gives everything she's got every time. And yeah, it's a nice story because, as you say, the Elisa Mertens blueprint is she wins when she's up against people she's supposed to beat. And so to take her out is quite an achievement.
Yeah, I don't know what it means for Kostaya. Sadly, I don't think it necessarily changes what I expect from her or where I kind of position her in my mind as a threat at the big tournaments. But I'm really pleased for her. I think that's a great story. Some other news from the week. We've got Madrid starting this week. The women's tournament, I think, starts on Thursday. The men's tournament starts over the weekend. Coverage of all of it on Prime starts from Thursday, but we'll have studio coverage. I'll be presenting that from Sunday. Unfortunately, we had the news yesterday that Bianca Andreescu is out of the tournament after travelling to Madrid. She's tested positive for COVID-19. She tested twice negative before flying, and then in her test upon arrival, COVID-19 was detected, so she's had to withdraw from the tournament. Gutting for her. I hope she's well. She says she's fine at the moment. Of course, her coach, Sylvain Bruno, was one of those that tested positive on the way to Australia, and she was forced into hard quarantine as a result. So tough one on that front for Bianca Andreescu. We've got Estoril this week on the men's side. We also have on our agenda here, Matt, a chap called Jensen Brooksby, who's not one of our shout-outs. what is he? Why? What do we need to know about Jensen Brooksby, Matt?
Well, I just think given that Aslan Karatsev has become such a feature of our lives this year, you know, and his run really started at the back end of last year when he won a load of challenger titles, I think we probably should be paying attention to Jensen Brooksby, who's a 6'4", 20-year-old American who only turned professional in January this year. And that was a choice to turn professional rather than going to college. He'd been injured for last year. Anyway, he's won 3 challenger titles already this year. He's had the best start to a challenger tour season since Kei Nishikori in 2010. He's reached 4 finals, 3 titles, 19-2 win-loss record, and he's just won back-to-back titles on a hard court in Orlando and then a clay court in Tallahassee. So just a good story from the Challenger Tour, and you know, someone to keep an eye on.
And one should definitely pay attention to Matt Roberts when he marks your card about a young tennis player.
Sometimes.
I'm thinking more sort of Alcaraz than Kuzmova.
Right.
Matt. Okay. Yeah. But now I've said the K word, all is tarnished. Sorry about that. But yeah, watch out for Jensen Brooksby, definitely. I think that's it for our roundup of the week that was. A look ahead. I always find Madrid interesting because of the altitude there. It does put a slightly different complexion on things.
Looking forward to seeing Dominic Thiem, hopefully.
Yes. Yeah. Looking forward to Osaka. Potentially hearing about Dan Evans speaking to Dominic Thiem as a result of Dominic Thiem sort of inadvertently, in a very polite way, sort of trashing him in the press last week. Some slightly weird quotes from Dominic Thiem about Dan Evans, sort of suggesting, sort of implying that he's the sort of player that has succeeded post-lockdown for very specific reasons. Anyway, I doubt that Dan Evans enjoyed those comments very much. Oh, to be a fly on the wall in that locker room. So Madrid getting underway this week. We have shout-outs to come. But first, I must make my apologies to Zeus once again, my mascot. It's a consistent run of failures. I really feel like Petra Kvitova let us down this week. She served for the match against Svitolina. And yeah, let us down rather badly, Zeus. We will ride again. Matt, who did you let down this week?
Scousel Mouser and I let down Annette Contaveit, who lost to Irina Sabalenka in a really good quarterfinal, actually.
I mean, she let you down, really.
Well, I suppose so. Yeah. Anyway,
David
and Maria Sakkari.
Oh, we've done. Yeah. You were out. You were out at the time of the last
Maria
podcast.
Maria Sakkari blew it for us.
I feel like someone's going to get points this week.
Yeah, come on, Rogue, sort yourself out.
Probably Daryl. Me.
Probably
he's got to the last 2 finals, and with who was it? First
it
time
it was Jaume Munar.
Oh yeah. He came within an inch of winning a title and then didn't.
We would have ended the competition if he'd won.
And then this time it was Sabalenka.
We're all being humiliated by the man that predicted France would win the ATP Cup. And it's dreadful. Billie Jean is sat at my feet just now saying, I am sponsored by Billie Jean King, and that's great. That's what she would be saying if she could. But she's not. She'll never know how cool she is. But I know, and that's great. Chris Albert Lee is our executive producer, and he's a top bloke. And of course, we have a mascot for this week. Our mascot is Max, and he's a 1.5-year-old tabby and white moggy, which is another word for cat, who lives. Oh, hang on. No, is moggy a word? Is that a type of cat, or is it just slang for cat? Definitely a cat. He lives with Alison Rowe, our backer in New Zealand. So hello, Alison. Hello, Max. Haven't seen a picture of Max yet, but it's okay because I subscribe to the newsletter and that is where I will get to see lovely Max. We have shout outs, Matt, and they are for
Geraint, backer 575.
Just Geraint. So it might be Geraint Thomas.
Might be.
Tour de France winner.
I mean, Geraint's just the sort
absolutely
of...
Absolutely no evidence that it's not.
Just so, the sort of chap
hello
that
and
can
thank you.
Trade off the single name. So, you know, bloody impressive.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Thanks for your support.
We have Seth Wassing.
Right, Seth.
Who is receiving a shout out thanks to Kyle. Kyle has given a shout out to Seth
Gifting
Wassing.
A shout out. Mm. That's very cool.
Kyle and Seth. Like they could be sort of lead characters in a sort of buddy, bro, jock.
Cop movie.
Sort of, well, I was going to say sort of like super bad style teen movie. Sort of teen movie, is it? Young adult. YA. Anyway, moving on.
Thanks for your support.
And finally, it gives me great pleasure to give the final shout out today to Steve Armour.
Hey! Oh. All right, Steve.
One of our very favourite people.
Yes. Yeah.
Hello, Steve. Yeah, you're the best, Steve. Thanks for your support and all your lovely emails. That's it for our tennis podcast for this week. We'll be back, of course, on Thursday. David, Matt, thank you for your company.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Should we say that we're trying out some new technology today to record the podcast? And I've been anxious this whole time, hoping it's working. So if you're listening to this, it has worked.
We'll see you next week. No, we'll see you Thursday.
The technology's all right, but we can't remember how to do it.
Bye, folks.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.